Hey everybody, this episode is a slight departure from what we usually do. As you may know, here at Real Agent Pod, we're all about representation in movies and media. But we also believe in representation in our politics and from our public officials. So, Renee and I had a chat with Brad Jenkins. Brad is the president and CEO of AAPI Victory Fund, the first super PAC that's focused on mobilizing AAPI-eligible voters and moving them to the ballot box. For those of you who might not know, but really should, we do have a midterm election coming up this year in November. So we invited Brad onto our show to talk about the history and current status of AAPI voter engagement and how the Asian American population can really show up this year and continue showing up for every election cycle, not just the general election. We also talk about the viral Funny or Die piece Between Two Ferns with President Obama back in 2014, which Brad helped put together. Of course, we couldn't help but sprinkle in some movie talk in this conversation, as Brad is a huge movie fan as well. So, if you want to learn more about Brad Jenkins and the AAPI Victory Fund, go to aapivictoryfund.com. That's aapivictoryfund.com. If you want to learn everything there is about voting, such as where to go, when to vote, and how to register, go to vote.org.
To DC, I was like young, you know. Yeah. I was following that Obama.
Yeah. That's right.
That hope and that, remember that hope and change, you know?
Yep.
Following that hope and change.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Right. And now I'm old. Now when I bring up Obama, these like Gen Zers are like, yo.
It's like, oh, he's an old president.
Obama's not cool.
Not cool.
Now. What? It's really old shit.
It's, yeah, no, seriously. It's like, it's a wake up call. Mm-hmm. And then I had to pull the Bernie card. I was like, well, I love Bernie. And they're like, okay, okay.
You're like, cool, oh, you're okay. Cool. We know who that is.
Oh my gosh.
You're cool. You're cool.
Hold up. That's crazy.
Yeah. When we came here, you know, because it was different. I mean, all of us, all the kids, I call them kids, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, and speaking of the Bay, that's where I started volunteering, was in the Bay, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we just saw Kamala a couple weeks ago, but
yes,
you know, I remember when we were like scrappy volunteers trying to do events. And I kid you not, Kamala was the only person we could get to do events for Obama because he was down 30 points to Hillary. Wow. In that primary. I mean, every single person was telling us there's no way. Mm-hmm. He's going to win. There's no right. way Obama's going to win. Oh, yeah. There's no way he's going to win.
Giving me chills because I can remember it.
Yeah. And we, Hillary beat him in California, but we won the Bay, right? Like we won Congressional District 14, which was a district I organized. And we won, I think we won 15 and 8, all of the kind of major Bay Area spots like SF and San Jose. Mm. But yeah, man, I've been in DC ever since. Moved to DC. I was telling, not to name drop, but I had the greatest moment a couple of weeks ago because we did this event with Kamala, with the vice president at the Kennedy Center. And I got to invite all of my favorite. It was like, you know, like when you're a kid and, you know, it's like you can pretend you're like Pharrell or you can pretend like you're Timbo and you're like, I'm just gonna create the album I want, right? Yeah. Like I'm just gonna invite all the
features.
Yeah. And that's what I got to do. I got to invite all of the speakers that I love, right? Mm-hmm. All the people that inspire me. And I got to invite, you know, my friend Bo, mm-hmm. Bo Sia. I'm not sure if you guys know Bo, who's like Bay Area, you know, LA legend, but and he dropped this incredible spoken word poem. But my friend Jeannie Mai, mm-hmm. was my co-host, and Jeezy obviously is her husband. So at the end of the night, I got to tell him that when we won, right, when all these kids, we won, and it was crazy. We're like, oh my God, we're all moving to DC. I don't know what we're going to do in DC, but we're all getting out there to DC. We're all hitting up like tuxedo rental spots because we're going to all of these inaugural balls.
Yeah, right.
Like
going all out. That was a jam. Dressed to the nines.
And so it's all of these like broke ass blazing kids like me, you know what I mean? Like trying to get like a cheap, it was almost like prom, like trying to get a cheap tuxedo to go to these balls.
Mm-hmm.
But the song that we were playing like nonstop was My President is Black, which was mm-hmm. Jeezy. So I was telling him this story.
Nice. Love it.
And he was loving it. He was just like, yeah. He's like, yeah, man, that's why we made that song. We made that song for y'all. So
that's love that's it. Amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Also, fun fact, Jeannie Mice, we went to the same high school. We're not the same age, what? But she attended Milpitas High School, and that's my high school.
Oh, she's from, man. Yeah,
well, what incredible. A small world.
Small world. Yeah. That's I'm talking about.
Small world.
But I love your podcast. I thought we were going to talk about a movie. So I was like, oh, what Asian American movie are we going to hit up? We talk about whatever, man. We talk about politics. I love your pod. I love what you guys do.
Appreciate
that. The cool thing about your pod now, though, is there's so many Asian American movies, or just Asian movies in general.
Yeah. What's a movie you watched recently that just sticks out to you?
Well, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Ooh. Which, have you guys done that movie yet?
Ask Renee about it.
So we did. Yes, I did a reaction with one of my other co-hosts.
Oh.
Perfection, masterpiece, iconic, you know, like any other words you want to describe it. Love that film so much. Love Michelle Yeoh.
I couldn't agree more. It was like, I didn't know anything about it going into it.
Same.
Too.
Same.
Because I'd been so busy. So I didn't read anything about it. I was in LA for a different event. I texted Bing because literally I saw they were like, oh, this the premiere. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait a second, that's tonight?
Uh-huh.
And so I texted Bing and he was like, Brad, come on. I literally texted him like 4 hours before the thing. He's like, you know, this is oversold. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm so sorry, man. He's like, fine, I'll figure out
I'll get you in.
A way to sneak you in.
Oh my God.
I didn't know anything about that movie.
That's the best way to go into that film, by the way. Know nothing. And there, you really can't spoil it either. I mean, you can.
Yeah, even if you were trying to explain it to someone.
No, it blew my mind. Here's the thing. Like, I mean, I felt it hit me so many different ways, but you know, the husband character, right?
Yes.
It hit me so hard. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but you know, I'm a dad, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that character a lot.
Yeah.
I do. Like, it's a, you know, being a dad is thankless, man. And I don't know, it's just so beautiful, this idea, you know, and especially his own personal journey, right?
Yeah.
And how that aligned with the character's journey. And it's just so dope. So, so good. So,
okay. So I have a question for you actually about that film. So I have this thing with Ray.
Okay.
Where every film we watch that is emotional, right?
Yeah.
I ask him, did this film make you cry? And he has made a comment about in the past about how he's got his tear ducts surgically removed. He does not, he cannot cry. Ray, can you tell us what is the film that's gotten you closest to crying?
So the closest film that got me to crying, there's two, and one I just watched recently. But before, when we talked about this, Renee, was first Remember the Titans. I don't know why.
Ooh.
It almost got me. It almost got
almost,
me.
Almost
got me. Like a little, okay. I felt it a little bit, just a little bit of eye welch. But most recently, I was, I think last weekend, I was like, had some free time. I watched Coach Carter. And that almost got me. Coach Carter.
It's a sports movie.
I think it's a sports movie.
That's the thing.
I know. It's the sports drama.
Well, wait. What about Field of Dreams?
Field of Dreams and also A League of Their Own. Very
A League of Their Own.
I would say very close. Like, I love A League of Their Own. One of my all-time favorite movies, actually.
We just showed A League of Their Own to my kids a couple weeks ago.
What they think?
Nice.
It hit. It slapped. Like, they loved it. Like, especially my daughter, like, loved it, right? Like, it's still, it holds up. That's a good one. Oh, but like, wait a second, Ray. So you've never cried in a movie ever? Like, you never felt tears in a theater? Like, you never tasted those sweaty tears?
Brad, I think he's lying, but he's just like trying to put up a front. You know, he's like, oh, macho. I don't.
Yeah,
cry.
Yeah.
Wait. I got one. I know you cried to this. Coco.
Oh, close. Oh. Close.
You didn't cry at Coco at the end?
I know, right?
I've never been moved to physical, like, actual tears, but definitely, like, maybe eyes watery, but never full-on, like, sobbing.
Oh, I'm a wreck.
Yo, we saw Coco. Renee, right? Like,
yeah.
I saw Coco, and I kid you not, like, I wasn't just crying. I was doing, like, the, like, like, I couldn't breathe crying.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So, for Everything Everywhere All at Once, I had snot bubbles in my face mask from crying so much. And that last half of the second one, just wrecked. So
damn.
For Ray and Brad, did Everything Everywhere All at Once make you cry?
It did. It did, but not like crazy. I don't know what it was. I think I was just so overstimulated.
Yeah.
I don't know the right way to describe it.
I was still processing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there was just so much happening, right? And that's the whole point, right?
I guess exactly.
It was Everything Everywhere.
I couldn't. I mean, there were moments where I was reaching that, but I felt like every time, that was what was so beautiful about the film. I felt like every time it would get there a little bit, it would switch up on you real quick.
Yeah.
Right. Like it never felt melodramatic, right? Like the moments, you know, and
so
there's some obvious moments, right? Like obvious, like, you know, literally hugging, right? Like literally like physical embrace and all that stuff. But then a moment later, you got hot dog hands, right? So it's like
hot dog fingers. Who comes up with that? Oh my goodness! And the rock
only
scene,
the
too.
Mind of the Daniels.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Good.
And the talking rocks.
So good.
So you went to the premiere. Did you actually get to meet any of the? Did they actually have? Were they there in the Q&A?
They were there. We came late, so my colleague Midori and I got in there that day. So they had like a talk before the screening, which was a bummer. I thought it was going to happen after.
Oh yeah. Oh, so interesting. It was before.
Right? Because wouldn't you want to have it after? But no, like after it was over, it was like, all right, thanks.
And then they just left. Everyone's gone.
and everyone bounced.
Aww. Yeah. Oh, okay. Then.
But Renee, you got to, did you get to see some of the actors?
Okay. Did you get to see them?
No, I didn't. But in San Francisco, during the San Francisco Film Festival, they were actually having an honor of Michelle Yeoh. And Sandra Oh was interviewing her.
Oh, so,
I mean,
on.
Like, it was my aunties up on stage. I had to show up. It was phenomenal. It was
That's
wonderful.
Incredible.
They were just, you know, just like so much energy, like just amazing charisma and energy going. They were sipping wine. They were dancing. It was wonderful. You know,
they're like the two goats.
Absolutely. And it was just like they both felt like the other person was like better than them. And so it was just like really great, just energy of just like ingratiating each other. And
yeah,
and of course, you know, like the energy in the crowd's really great too. But yeah, like it was really,
like, you're great. No, you're great. No, you're great.
Yes.
And then the audience is like, no, both of you guys are pretty great.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. You know, easily 5-10 minutes standing ovation before we even got started, like just coming out. We were just like, oh my gosh, she's like, and she goes, I don't know what I did to deserve this. And I was like, are you kidding me? And, you know, we're like, oh, but yeah, that's great.
I feel like movies need to do that more often. I feel like you gotta, like, you know, when you have that personal connection during interviews.
Here's what's really great about Everything All at Once. And also the only thing I can work off of is Minari, is that those films really do take their time to like really connect with the community, because I know of so many friends like who've got early screenings, early access codes, and like they could care less of whether or not they paid for the ticket. They just wanted to show the community like this is an important film that you need to see. And I don't know if it's a combination of us just being connected, but I think I've noticed that whenever there is a big Asian representative movie, they do take the time to like reach out to those advocacy groups of all types and say like, hey, come on over, watch this early screening of this movie, and people talk about it, you know?
Yo, you're so right. I couldn't agree more. I mean, Minari is another one, right?
Yeah,
where, wait, you didn't get emotional during Minari either?
I know, right?
Ray,
okay.
We got to get you some therapy, man.
Okay.
We got to hook up.
Thank you, Brad. Okay. I'm so glad the guest
I'm starting to think this was all a ploy, just an intervention for me. I think this is,
you
I'm starting to figure it out.
On the inside, Ray. You just cry on the inside. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think
there's a
I
lot
just,
to unpack here, Ray.
Yeah. And one of the things, just a random thing, is just going to set me off. I'm just going to be the most random things, and then I'm just going to start bawling.
Then you're going to cry for like 3 weeks straight.
Yeah, every movie.
Like all the tears are going to come out.
Right.
You know?
I'm like, I should have cried for Everything All at Once. I'm holding it back.
So wait, what is y'all's favorite, not to put y'all on the spot, but not favorite movie, but favorite movie you guys have discussed on the Real Asian Pod?
Okay, that's a great question. I do have one, but I'll let Renee go first.
Gosh, I'm probably going to take the one though. Okay, it's actually from season one.
Throwback.
My most favorite film it was the second one that I reviewed, but it's the one where it was just Ray and I. It was Origin Story by Kulap Vilasak.
Ooh,
I love
Kulap. She's
she's wonderful.
I wonder if she'll be offended if I call her a friend. But she's no, a friend.
What,
she's
why would she? Friend. She's basically family to me. I'm one oh my degree God. Separation from her. Yeah.
So I worked with Scott. Well, yeah. Again, sort of. I again, this is a very loose, quote unquote, worked with Scott. But I did work with Scott when I was at the White House. Scott mm-hmm. is obviously the creator of Between Two Ferns. That's with right. Zach Galifianakis.
Yep.
And so I worked with Scott and Zach and Funny or Die on that video with the president, with Zach and President Obama.
Great episode, by the
way. So I've known Trulop for many years. She's that movie is so incredible.
Yes.
It's so good. Everyone's got to watch it.
Absolutely. Hands down. And Ray didn't even cry on that one either. I was like, damn, something is wrong with this boy.
You didn't cry during that?
No, I was more of like so concerned. I was like, oh God, the ending is going to, it's like,
you
know?
I love the story, just the story around the creation of the movie, not even yes. just the film itself. So she was actually going around doing the film circuit back in 2018 or something like that. And so she was mm-hmm. at the CAM Festival, which is here in San Francisco, the Center of Asian American Media. Festival. And so she was there doing the Q&A. And I, again, another one of those, had no expectations, didn't know what I was expecting, just kind of walked in because her cousin, who Brian Talwara, who's like, you know, Lao poet, whatever, he invited me to go and see it. And I said, okay, I'll go see it. You know, it's your cousin, sure. And I sat down and it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. I'd actually only kind of cursorily heard of Trulop before whatever reason. Like, that's my bad. It blew me away, and I was just, I wish I had tissues, because I was just sobbing. Like, it was so good. Such a gut punch at the very beginning. And that was, and you think like, oh, it can't get any better than this. But no, it gets even better and deeper. It was wonderful. So shout out to anyone who hasn't seen it. Go watch that film.
Go watch it ASAP.
And then come back and listen to this podcast.
There's the call to action.
And speaking of activism. Speaking of activism, Trulop is incredible
in
organizing the Laotian community and just being such, you know, she's amazing. And there have been numerous times, you know, throughout the years, I've been at this for, again, I'm old. So I've been at this for a long time, man. Like we were trying to fire up Asian Americans on, you know, voting and representation, like, you know, before Crazy Rich Asians, before Gold House, you know, before all these dope things, you know, and she's been at it before. Same, you know, she's been
since day one.
Please go watch Origins, or it's so good. And she's also hilarious. I love all of her. She is
wonderful.
Podcasts.
Oh my gosh, she's great.
So the company I work for, Lemonada, produces Add to Cart, her podcast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I have not yet to meet her, though. Renee and I were talking a little bit because I just started at the company. So she's like, have you gotten a chance to like meet Suchin and Trulop? And I'm like, no, just because their show is not under my portfolio, so I've not gotten a chance to. But one of these days I will. I don't want to rush it. I don't want to fan.
You don't want to come in too hot.
Yeah. I don't want them to think I'm too desperate. You know, that stench of desperate. No,
I know that feeling. there's always those people in my head where I'm like, I'll get to them in like 5 years. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I got to build my shit up first.
You know what I could do, Brad, is I'll organize a big event at the Kennedy Center and I'll invite them. And that's how
and
I get to
meet. And then you can invite anyone you want.
I take your route. There you go. I see your game now.
There you go.
That's the game.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the game.
What's your favorite?
Oh, my favorite. So we did an episode on this. But even before we did an episode on this, I would say this is probably one of my favorite, is Saving Face. Mm. Alice Wu's, I think, first film. I think the reason it's a throwback cult classic, 2004. Five, I think, is when it came out.
That's with Lin Chen, right? Lin and Michelle.
Yeah, Michelle Krusik.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why I do have like a personal resonance with the movie because of the topic that it touches upon. So my sister is a lesbian, and her coming out story going to my family and her journey.
Yeah.
Some of the themes that were from that movie, something I like connected with, but also just the writing, the acting.
It's a beautiful film, man.
It's a beautiful film. Still holds up. When we did an episode on it, like, I still enjoy it thoroughly. It's like whenever I need a good, cheerful pick-me-up kind of thing, it's one of those movies I kind of reach out to.
I love it. Well, I'm glad we got to talk about a little bit of movies, because here's the thing. I have my favorite podcast, but you know how it is. Like, your listeners are like, you know, you get in a groove and you're like, all right, what movie are they going to do this time? And then they're like, wait a second, we got to listen to this idiot talk about politics for an hour? Like, unsubscribe immediately.
Nah. Let's hold on. No, hit that subscribe button. Hit that follow button if you're listening. That's right.
Hit that follow. Hit that like. 5 stars.
Don't unsubscribe.
Recommend.
I'm just saying, if we didn't talk about movies a little bit, that's what would probably happen. You know.
Yeah, definitely. But here's the thing, though. Interesting enough, you know, we did a very reaction episode of the 2020 election, and it was actually one of our, you know, higher listened episode.
Oh, okay.
We were so super surprised about it. I mean, it was kind of spur of the moment kind of thing. It was me and my cousin Alan, who's also a co-host, and we were paying attention to the election, obviously. And it was obviously such a momentous time when the election. Well, number one, we were supposed to do it on election night, but because we didn't know the results yet, so we're like, okay, we can't really talk about anything because we don't know the results. So we're just kind of waiting around and sitting. I think it was like 2 days later we found out who won. But yeah, it actually turned out to be one of our higher listened episodes, and I think it's just because, you know, people. I would assume some people do enjoy listening to what the average person thinks about the election and the politics. And I think that's kind of part of the reason why I think I really admire what you're doing, Brad, is that you're going, reaching out to all these, you know, podcasts and reaching out to different creators to like get people galvanized and get people politically informed. And because it is really important, especially amongst the Asian American base.
I want to go listen to that pod, because that must have been, was it like an obituary of America? Right? What year was it?
It was 2020. So it was when. Oh,
okay. 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 So that was okay. That was better.
Yeah.
If it was the Trump one, it would just be you guys drinking heavily, I'm sure. You know what I mean?
I will say that it was really painful when Trump won. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
It was a reckoning, man. It was a moment, but you know.
It was a moment. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's like what I say about this political stuff for your listeners who maybe aren't into politics is, because the other thing about the way that I approach this stuff is my parents are Trump voters, right? So I grew up, you know, in my family's story, like my mom's Korean. She grew up in, you know, outside Seoul. My dad's black. He grew up in Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. Very conservative. And my dad was a military guy. I met my mom in Korea. And they have like a very, the only way to put it is like, they just don't have high expectations is the best way to put it. Like my parents
in general, or of the government,
of the government, of politicians, okay, of laws, gotcha, of anything, of any kind of, like, because at the end of the day, like, my dad grew up where he grew up in the Jim Crow South, where his father, you know, my grandfather worked at an all white country club, you know, like my dad, you know, grew up literally being told, like, the law told him he was less than human, right? Like, he couldn't go to certain parts of town. He couldn't go into certain areas. And when you grow up like that, you innately are skeptical of anyone in power, that people in power, they don't care about you, right? And so because of that mindset, my parents, they were never really Democrats or Republicans, they were just anti-politicians, right? Because politicians only care about themselves. They don't care about people. Right. They care about power, right? And I had that approach growing up. That was just my thinking of, I just thought all politicians were bullshit. And I just thought that they didn't give a shit about anyone, right? And by the way, that assessment is not entirely inaccurate.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying this out loud right now, and I'm like, yeah, it sounds about right, right? Like, you look at the separation between what the American public, especially on the gun violence stuff that's happening right now, what the people want and how they are being represented. But here's my thing, though, and this is what I tell my parents all the time now, and what I had to come to learn about the way that the system works, is that those in power, right, like those people that my dad just wrote off and the people that my dad told me, like, don't worry about them, they do have considerable power, and they want you to think that. They want you to think that you can't do anything about it. They want you not to vote. They want you to not be engaged and be educated, because what happens is they stay in power. They stay in power forever, right? So it's we live in a system really where cynicism is king. Cynicism And the feeling that you don't have a voice, that's what people in power want. 90%, over 90% of incumbents win. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean federal incumbents. I mean all incumbents. So people that run for school board, people that run for city council, people that run for mayor. When you're in office, it's very hard for you to lose, mm-hmm. right? And what they want, they don't want new people to vote. When I say they, I mean like that's just the way it is. If you're in power, new people voting means new people may vote and vote you out.
That's
yeah.
right.
So there's right. no incentive. You know, the number I throw out to people when, you know, remember when Susan Sarandon was getting all that shit because she yeah. was like, because she didn't want to vote for Hillary. And like all these Hillary people were blaming Susan Sarandon for the reason why Hillary lost, right? Like this one.
Yeah.
Like, what an incredible actress Susan Sarandon is. But like, poor Susan Sarandon, she's just like fired up and woke. And she was just like, I'm not voting for Hillary. And all of these people on Twitter are blaming Susan Sarandon for losing the election. When that election, 80 million people didn't vote. 80.
Wow.
80 million eligible voters did not vote. They just stayed at home. That's not Susan Sarandon's fault, right?
That's right.
We have to do a better job. Like, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to provide cover for Republicans because most Republicans are bullshit. And I'm not down with Andrew Yang. I think everything he's saying is bullshit right now. But at the same time, though, for people who are listening, who are like, I'm not down with Democrats, or I'm not down with Biden or Kamala or whatever.
Right.
That's cool. You don't have to be. But here's the thing. If you're an Asian American listening to this podcast, we only represent 1% of elected officials in this country.
That's
one.
Yeah. Right.
1%. Right. That's fucking crazy. Like we are, like think about that. We are like, think about San Francisco. How many Asian Americans there are in San Francisco? How many Asian Americans there are in like Vegas or
Los Angeles and New York?
Yeah, Atlanta, New York City.
Yeah.
1%. Like my friend Andy Kim, it's crazy to be able to say you're a friend, but my friend Andy Kim, right? My man who grew up in New Jersey like me, and we're both like corny dads. We got dad bods and we like drink bad beer. He's the first Korean American elected, first Korean American Democrat elected to Congress in history, in fucking history.
Wow.
We're not even, we're so far behind y'all. Like Asian Americans, like, I feel like the cool thing about your podcast and the cool thing about this moment is I think culturally we're there. Culturally, we're representing. You know, I was watching the Grammys and I was like, yo, every single one of these artists for the first like five artists in a row were Asian American. It was like Olivia Rodrigo. Oh,
yeah.
Anderson .Paak. Oh, BTS. Yeah. Oh, it's like literally every single person coming out is Asian American. I was like, holy shit. But if you look at our like elected officials, there's like practically zero, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's the reason why, like, you know, I do a lot of stuff. Like, you know, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a producer.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a hustler, you know, like that's my jam. But when I got offered to run the Asian American Victory Fund, which is, it's literally the first super PAC for Asian Americans. Norm Mineta created it 7 years ago, you know, rest in power to Norm.
Yeah.
And the reason why I created it was just like, literally what I'm just saying is like, there are so few Asian American candidates that have access to money, access to power, which is to say access to people that know what the hell they're doing, right? Like good campaign managers, right? Like good ad makers, you know, people that know how to turn out the vote. And so Norm and my friend Shekar created it 8 years ago, and they've been the only ones doing this. I mean, it's unfortunate, but they're really the only super PAC that spends millions of dollars each cycle trying to get Asian Americans elected. And so when they reach out to me, I was like honored, to be honest. I was like, are you sure you want me? Like,
yeah, what was that moment like for you when you got the announcement?
I didn't, at first I was just kind of like, oh, you want me to like make some videos for you? Like I thought that, you know, but I was honored, honestly. And, you know, the fact that Norm, you know, the fact that this is the year that he passed when I took over the Victory Fund is very special. And there's just so much work to be done. And to your point on, you know, this moment of getting people that we love. And I, you know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of the work that I did for President Obama was, you know, how do we keep that momentum going, right? Like we had record turnout for young people
That's right.
in 2008, record turnout. It was like a 50% uptick in the youth vote among people of color, right? Because Obama was transformational. And we've never gotten back to that level since 2008.
You mentioned his 2004 speech, I believe, in another interview, changed your life
almost. Oh, man. Speaking of crying, see, Ray, you keep bringing up things where I cry. I love it. trying to put me on blast. Yeah, that was the speech. That was the speech where, you know, I had a moment where you know, identity is a tricky thing. Like growing up, I never really felt American, you know, and I know that that's right. A feeling that many Asian Americans feel. And, you know, I'm Asian American and African American. And so I have a even more conflicted relationship with feeling like I'm a part of something. Like I never really felt a part of anything. Right. And, and that speech was interesting because it was like, and I, you know, anyone who's never heard it for the Gen Z kids out there, like it's the best speech. YouTube. It's the best political speech ever written. I mean, there's a lot of debate. Like Cuomo had a really great convention speech way back when. This isn't, but by the way, this is not Chris. We're talking his dad. You know, there have been some really great. Clinton had some, you know, had some pretty good. Reagan obviously had some interesting speeches. But what was so great about that speech? It was only like 18 minutes. It was short, and it was so visual. It was like it very much. You know, it felt. Speaking of films, like it's very like some of the imagery is very cinematic. Like you kind of just like could visualize the story of America through this guy, through this like kind of weird, gangly, charismatic, big-eared guy, you know, like
young fella.
He was so disarming. He felt he didn't feel like a politician. He just felt like someone I wanted, you know, again, the line is like someone you want to have a beer with, but it's not even that. It was like, he felt like me. He felt like he was like, oh shit, like that could be me. That feels like me. And I think that that's the biggest separation with power, right? Is, and you read about it, you know, I'm a dad now. So I read all these books about fatherhood and how can you be a good dad or how do you do all this? And literally it's example. It's just seeing it. It's like, if you can see it, right? If you can see it, you start seeing yourself doing it. Like all my favorite Asian American filmmakers, I'm sure you guys have had these conversations where you're like, well, what, you know, when did you know you wanted to be a filmmaker? And it was like, when I saw myself, right?
Yeah.
It like, it, something changes. Like, you're like, oh shit, like that can be me. Like I can tell my story. I don't have to like pretend I'm, my favorite movie growing up was Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I was just like, I don't look like Ferris Bueller. I'm not like, you know what I mean? But I was just like, it felt like Ferris. I was like, I could be like, kind of like Ferris. But I never thought that I could be an actor. Do you know what I mean? Like, And I think that when it comes to politics right now, we have to do this. So we did this event and we invited all of our favorite humans, like, you know, Min Jin Lee, speaking of writers, like Min Jin Lee and Jose Antonio Vargas. And, you know, we had incredible folks like Daniel Day Kim speak. And, but the big thing is like, I wanted to make sure that we had all of these young Asian American elected officials there. So we had 20, we call them next generation leaders, but we had like state senator from Washington. We had like a, you know, Virginia state delegate, right? And we had, I mean, obviously the big ones we had was Boston Mayor Michelle Wu and Cincinnati Mayor Aptat Perval. It's just like what you guys do with your podcast. Like we got to just start showing this next generation of Asian Americans that they can run and win. That's really what it comes down to. In order to do that, we actually have to win some elections.
Yes. Brad, I got goosebumps. I'm fired up. I'm ready to go.
Did you know that you can rate podcasts on Spotify now? I'm going to assume you didn't know because there's actually no way for me to hear your response. Once you pull up our show on Spotify, you can simply tap on the rating button and give us a rating. That's actually the best way that you can support our show. If you fancy Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or however you get your podcast fix, I want to encourage you to rate our show and write us a quick review. By giving us a rating, it helps our show get discovered in this giant sea of podcasts. And if you really, 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 really want to support our show, go to realasianpodcast.com/support.
So let's clue our listeners in.
Yeah.
What is the AAPI Victory Fund and what are you trying to do with
it? Oh, Renee. See, this is why you're a good podcast host, because I should probably have said that way back when.
Yes, exactly.
No worries. So I'm president and CEO of something called the AAPI Victory Fund. It's a political action committee, right? So our job, honestly, and we have a C4, the Victory Power Fund, which doesn't do as much candidate work. It does more advocacy, like issue-oriented work. But at the end of the day, we raise money, we invest money in turning out the Asian American vote to win elections. We endorse candidates, mostly Asian American candidates, but the reality is for some of these important elections, especially this year, right, where the Senate hangs in the balance, where it's no longer 50 senators, we need 52 senators. Thank you, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. you know, so in states where there isn't an Asian American at the top of the ticket, but there's a very large Asian American population, where we decide. I mean, that's the other thing I want. I don't think Asian Americans, and by the way, it's not our fault, right? I'll point the blame to two things. One, it's just ignorance of our bad and underfunded journalists out there. Mm-hmm. There are very few political reporters who even know anything about the Asian American electorate at all.
That's right.
And, you know,
therefore they don't report it at all.
I was just going to say, and the ones that do, like, I'm a huge fan of David Nakamura at the Washington Post, and my wife and I just saw him at an event, and like, my man is incredible, but he's covering different stuff. He doesn't cover Asian American voters. Like, he's covering like voter suppression and civil rights and like what's happening at the DOJ, right? But David has been very generous and kind and has written about our community like when he can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there's so few, any, you know, attention that's paid to the Asian American electorate. And what ends up happening is when you read a poll, right, a big thing that we're doing this cycle is we're investing a huge deal, millions of dollars into polling, state by state polling. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is, you know, the Pew or the Quinnipiac or the AP, all these polls just won't include Asian Americans, like in the top lines. Mm-hmm. Like, it'll be like, this is the thing that always kicks me. It's like, this is what white college educated, who wear green flannel shirts and listen to, you know, J.D. Vance
Nickelback
on the podcast. This is what they think. This is what what white women who go to Pilates and who buy, you know, Pelotons, this is what they think. And they will completely dismiss the Asian American vote.
Right.
Completely dismiss it. Even in a state like Nevada, where we're like 14% of the vote, right?
I think you have people like AAPI data, right, who are trying.
Yeah, well, speak it up. And they just released some incredible data today.
So that's right.
Everyone should go look at it. But, you know, our polling is different, Renee, because we, AAPI data, you know, they are, you know, they're data first. I think they're 501c3, so they have to be nonpartisan. We're very explicit. We want to win elections, right? So we're very clear about the polling that we're doing. We're very clear about the states that we're doing the polling. And at the end of the day, the big thing that we want to do is, speaking of data, we have to invest in being able to figure out where our community is. And then we have to know how to actually reach them and inspire them, right? To not be a cynic like my dad, to like truly believe.
I was just about to say, it literally is about penetration to these communities that are so apathetic. Right. But with reason, right? There's cynicism.
With reason.
Yeah.
It doesn't come out of, it's not, that's totally right. And that's the other part that I do think Democrats, you know, not to call anyone out, but like, you know, Twitter is a cesspool, right? Like, everyone should just delete it from your phone.
It's a bathroom wall.
That's right.
Just delete it from your phone. I mean, honestly, I'm at the point now where, you know, I was on a panel, not to call myself out, but I was on a panel in 2015. With all these like tech geniuses, right? And like, and I was the person on the panel that was like, oh no, social media is good. It's good. Like, it can be a positive force for good. Mm-hmm. I was completely wrong.
Don't worry. We shit talk Twitter people all the time. So it's okay.
No, it's just,
on this podcast.
It's just not, I don't know how else to put it, but it's just not, it's not that it's not real life, because, you know, I think that they reflect how people feel. But I think that the sort of incentives for the discourse are completely out of whack. you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It allows people to say things with no repercussion or recourse.
100%. And I think there's no nuance.
There's no nuance. Oh, exactly. That's the biggest thing. There's no nuance. But the crazy thing is, it's like, yes, there's no recourse, but nowadays enough of it, there has been real world consequences. But
yes.
Like the senders don't, they're like, they get no penalty. It's just like that mob mentality, and it goes back to cancel culture and all that stuff.
And you believe it, and communities believe it, right? Like, I mean, Trump would not be Trump without Twitter. Trump would not be Trump without Facebook, you know, or obviously Fox News and all these places. But it's the exciting thing for me is we are trying to do things differently. Like, we have to play on social, obviously, but a lot of our work is going to be community to community, right? So we're investing in three counties. I know county, it sounds funny to be like, oh, three, that's it. But these are the three most important counties in this election. So Gwinnett County in Georgia, huge South Asian American community. Clark County in Nevada, huge Filipino community in Nevada. And Maricopa County in Arizona, which is like across the board, all kinds of, you know, East, Southeast, South Asian. These are the counties that are literally going to decide the fate of our election, right? We have Senate races, governor races, congressional races. In all these states, we're going to obviously be organizing in other states like Pennsylvania and North Carolina and Wisconsin. But for us, not to be hyperbolic or anything, but you know, we have to win these elections, and we have to help candidates like Andy Kim win. You know, like Andy, not to keep bringing up Andy, but
he's a great example, by the way.
My man is incredible. And like,
yes,
he's a Rhodes Scholar. He served our country in Afghanistan. He is the sweetest human of all time. He's the most brilliant guy I know. And he's literally, I think, one of two Democrats that won twice in a Trump district.
Wow.
So his district voted for Donald Trump twice. And somehow Andy Kim won. Somehow, somehow people were like, I'm voting for, they're pulling the lever for Donald Trump. And they're like, you know what? I'm pulling the lever for Andy Kim. And the other thing, the incredible thing about Andy is the district is about 2.5% Asian American.
So he didn't even use like his Asian constituents to get him there. He literally was out there trying to combine and unite a wide swath of different to get the votes. So I would say, so I'm Hmong, so like you do have a lot of elected Asian Hmong officials in like Minnesota, where you know, however,
powerhouse in Minnesota,
right? Exactly. But whenever I see like Hmong elected officials like Sheng Tao in Oakland, where she represents a district and she's running for mayor in Oakland, so vote for Sheng Tao.
Yes,
but
anyway, do it. She's amazing.
What's amazing is that the Hmong population in Oakland is pretty much non-existent, and yet she can be able to mobilize, galvanize, and be able to unite her constituents to vote for her. And I really believe she actually has like a chance to be able to be like the full first Hmong mayor of Oakland. And I think that'd be amazing to be able to have that representation. But I absolutely hear what you're saying, Brad. We need to be able to get people to just not be apathetic, but also need to be able to find out what your constituents want. You can't, you can't just like focus on just like one teeny tiny, your own base to get you there, because yes, it can work if that's what it is like Minnesota. I'm not saying anything bad about Minnesota, but like that's, you know, what you can see there. But when you can be able to mobilize and unite a constituency that is, has very various different like backgrounds and things like that, that's real power. So I really love the work that you're doing just in general, because of like just how you've articulated exactly what it is that we need to be able to have that representation and not just like pay lip service to, but really be able to breathe a breath of fresh air into politics, where we can be able to continue using that energy to synergize us and keep going, right?
Synergize.
Renee, you're giving me goosebumps now. I mean, here's the thing. And this is going to sound super cheesy, but it's like, it's a lot of fun, y'all, too. It's fun. Like, we got to get out, you know, again, I sound like such a boomer, but it's like, you got to get out from underneath your phones, y'all. Like, I think, I think people think, oh, I sent out a tweet and like, it got some likes. So I did a good job.
Shared a post or something.
Or like, I Instagram this thing. It's like, there's so many people out there, and they don't even need to be Asian American, by the way. Right. Like, I'm sure you have listeners of all races. Like, there's so many candidates out there that need your help. They need your help. And like, it doesn't take that much just to look around and just to be like, oh, okay, this person's running for this. I kid you not. If you email them and be like, yo, do you need some help? Like knocking on door, they'll be like, yeah. Yes. Candidate themselves will say yes.
That's
like,
right. That's right.
In 3 months time, you'll be the campaign manager. I kid you not. Like the amount of, you know, I had numerous friends, like my friend Morgan just ran for Senate in Ohio and she lost, unfortunately. My friend Matt Haney just won. Speaking of San Francisco and the Bay Area, Matt is incredible, a supervisor in San Francisco. He just won assemblyman race. Like, it's so much fun, y'all. Like, it's so much fun to host house parties, get your friends to learn about them, you know, meet your actual neighbors. I know it sounds crazy, but like, you know what
That's
I mean?
That's what people
like,
used to do. They actually spoke to their neighbors.
I mean, you can binge watch Stranger Things all in one night. That's cool. Like,
but I just finished that, by the way.
You can like go, not like literally like go and like meet new people, right? New people that like care about their community. It feels so good. You know, a lot of times you go to bed at night and you feel like shit, right? Especially during the gun violence stuff. Like, I mean, I know every parent I know just like literally just like couldn't go to sleep.
Right.
I haven't been able to stop crying like for like a week easily.
But like, here's a crazy thing though. Like, I just did this incredible call again, not to keep name dropping, but like with the team from Gabby Giffords, and we're going to do some cool shit. The Victory Fund's going to do all of this really great stuff with Giffords because, you know, and that was the thing that.
That's perfect. She's in Arizona too.
She's in Arizona. Exactly. Yeah. You're picking up what I'm laying down, Renee. But like Asian Americans, this is a moment for us, right? And it's not just quote unquote voting. You know, I think that the way that I felt a lot is I always did feel just like personally, I always felt like an outsider because I never really got the invitation to shit, to be candid. I actually still don't get invitations to shit.
That's right. Don't let those gatekeepers keep you down.
Yeah. Kick through that
because
gate.
Here's the thing. My name is Brad Jenkins. It is the worst Asian name. Like, that is a bad Asian name. Like, if I'm like sending out invites to an Asian American event and I see Brad Jenkins on the list, I'm like, what white husband is this?
Right.
I'm not inviting Brad Jenkins to this event.
A witness protection person.
If your last name is at least Lee, maybe.
I know. My friends are saying I gotta give myself an eight. You know, like, yeah, I gotta
Asian name.
My name. You know, like, it's the other way in Hollywood where, like,
yeah, I know.
Oh my God.
You Americanize.
So anglicizing. Yeah. Asianize it.
I'm gonna go the other way, y'all. I'm just gonna make my name more Asian. But no, but like, it reached a point where, not to whatever pull this card, but like, I eat Korean food every day. I mean, like, I mean, like, I feel more, you know, it's crazy to me for people to think that I'm not Asian, but I don't care what people think. And it reached a point where I just started inviting myself to Asian shit.
Like, That's right.
I just started going, you know, and there's a version of that, I think, with our community when it comes to issues like gun violence or when it comes to issues like Black Lives Matter, or it comes to issues like abortion rights, where sometimes a lot of, you know, I don't want to, you know, whatever, but like, I think a lot of Asian American groups sometimes think like, well, I didn't get invited to speak up about this, or I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, I think sometimes we're afraid to just be like, no, just do it. Just show up. Just be there. Right. Just be there for BLM. Just be there for March for Our Lives. And, you know, and because at the end of the day, during the Stop Asian Hate movement, these communities showed up for us, you know?
Yes.
And so that's another big thing that we're going to be doing is, you know, we got to stand up for dreamers. We are dreamers, by the way. Asian Americans are dreamers, you know? It's exciting, y'all. It really is. And we, you know, again, I think sometimes telling people, oh, go vote, like, that's just such a, it sounds almost like cliche. It's like,
it's so passive too, though, because there's so much more that you can do.
100%.
Give money, donate your time, volunteer, phone bank, get out the vote.
And by the way, if you don't want to vote, if there's no candidates that inspire you to vote, then don't vote. And that's my thing. I'm not saying go vote just to vote. What I'm saying is, to your point, Renee, like, when we think about, again, like what I was saying at the top, like all these bullshit people in power, the reason why they're in power is because we give them that power.
That's right.
We let them win. We don't do shit. We, not Asian Americans, just all of us as Americans. Like,
oh, I know. Oh, absolutely.
We're to blame.
80 million wasn't just one cohort of people. It was, you know, a third of American. Yeah.
All of us. Like, we allowed Donald Trump to happen. Like, it's not just, that's the thing. Like, people keep blaming people like my parents for letting Donald Trump happen. It's like, no, man, we voted.
Exactly.
We didn't vote, and we voted for Trump. So, you know, for the Victory Fund, you know, please look us up, you know, like we're going to do the cool thing. Speaking of the Bay Area. So one of the big things we did with this event, you know, and it's a little bit cheesy. I mean, it was pretty cheesy to be candid. Like I came up with the idea. I was like, you know, we should have these next generation leaders. We should like give them like trophies. Yeah. My younger colleague was like,
get out of here.
He was like, Brad, that's the most Asian thing I've heard in my life. You think you got to give everyone trophies? Like, no. Like what we got to do is like, because in my head, I'm like, look, 50 of these leaders came from all over the country and now 50 of them are going home. And we want to be able to do essentially what we did at the Kennedy Center in the Bay Area, right? In New York.
That would be great.
Right? In Miami, right? In Arizona. They're going to be like mini versions of what we're going to do, like get out the vote rallies, concerts, just also like community building. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like potlucks, you know?
Yeah.
And so the
hanging Andy out, Kim, block parties.
Yeah, block parties. Like, because that's the other thing. We got to get these politicians out of this like boring ass shit where no one wants to go to a traditional political thing. That's boring.
Yeah.
But like, if we're doing something, you know, like what you were just saying, Renee, right? With the mayor, with the future mayor of Oakland.
Yes.
If she's doing a potluck, right? If she's doing a potluck in Oakland and we get like some dope ass, you know, Bay Area rappers to come, right? And we get like, and it's fun. And like, that's the thing that we gotta, you know, again, I sound so cheesy, but like,
no, not at all.
We gotta make it fun.
Exactly, Brad. And that actually goes back to this point that you made earlier on at the top, right? About how you put together Between Two Ferns. For Obama, for the for ACA. And this was to be able to connect with a younger audience.
Yeah.
And sure, if Gen X people and boomers did not appreciate it, that wasn't for them, right? 100%. But I'd love to kind of know, tell me a little bit more about like, thinking outside of the box to do something like that. First off, like, how was your experience doing that? But also like, tell me a little bit about like, what was the thinking behind it?
Well, I mean, the fact that we already name dropped Kulop and Scott, so now I gotta be very careful with my words. No, I mean, the reality is, the amount of credit that I got in the White House for pulling that off and like since then is very, very exaggerated, to be candid. Because I think at the end of the day, like, it was always something that Zach and Scott wanted to do, right?
Mm.
In fact, they spoke to my predecessor, Cal Penn. Speaking of people who Americanized their names, God bless Cal.
Yes.
Cal, by the way, Cal is literally like, you got to have him on your podcast. He's like the greatest. We all connect you guys.
Will he join us?
Like he's,
oh my God.
And such a film buff. And like, he's incredible. And also, by the way, speaking of Cal, I'm not sure if you guys have done Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Yes, we have.
You have?
And we did Namesake.
And you did Namesake.
Yes.
No, because both of those movies, but I would even say, I know people are not going to believe me, I would say Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle had maybe the biggest impact on me.
You know what? It's low key, very impactful and very important.
Low key, right? Right, Ray?
Yes. Yeah.
Low key.
When you look underneath the hood, you could see that it's very smart.
Low key. Think about it. Two Asian Americans. Stoners. it's not really about them being Asian, but it's so quintessentially Asian. You know what I mean? Like it was huge to just see something like that and feel 100%. Again, like we were talking about before, like, oh yeah, like that's literally they're in Jersey in that movie, by the way. It's another reason why I love that movie.
Yeah. Fun fact.
But no, so like the idea for Between Two Ferns with Obama was always around. But the thing about these kinds of ideas is that they're always around, but like how do you actually get the president to do it, right? Like, how do you actually, and this is the thing that, you know, like what we just did at the Kennedy Center. Yeah, like the Asian American community should have done this 10 years ago, but we've never, for whatever reason, never really had the will or the fortitude or the like, just someone being crazy enough to just like ensure that it happens. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so, exactly. and by the way, like when we finally were able to get Between Two Ferns done, and the biggest reason why, for folks who don't remember, is Obama's signature legislative achievement, in addition to the Recovery Act, was passing healthcare, right?
Yep.
It had never been done since, you know, in almost like 100 years, like the amount of reforms that Obama did for healthcare. But the crazy thing about the way that this all worked though, and it's so funny because when the law passed and I started at the White House, my boss talked about this in the future. He was just like, You do realize that like in a year, we're going to have to get people to go to a website and sign up for healthcare. Mm-hmm. Right. He said it that way. Exactly. You know, he's like, if you think getting people to register to vote is hard, getting people to go to a website and sign up for healthcare, that sounded impossible. Mm-hmm. It sounded impossible, right?
Yeah.
What we learned was, I mean, the biggest thing we learned from like, you know, Health and Human Services and Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services was that, well, a lot of people are going to sign up, like people that really need it, because sadly, yeah, there's so many people who are sick. So many people were sick. So many people who got kicked off their healthcare. So many people who, you know, their children need healthcare. It's like those people are going to sign up.
Absolutely.
But the way that the enrollment exchanges work, the way that the whole system works, is that if those are the only people who sign up for healthcare, then the whole system goes out of whack. Then everyone's healthcare premiums go up.
So you have to get healthy people on there too, right? To balance it out.
You needed healthy people. Yeah. Exactly. You needed young people to sign up.
Yes.
So anyway, so we rolled out the website. The website didn't work. Then it like crashed.
And yes, so I remember it.
The website started working again, but that's what was happening. The website is working again, but the only people signing up were sick people. And so what really ended up happening and like how it happened was President Obama himself, they would have this biweekly Roosevelt Room meeting with senior staff, including my boss, Valerie Jarrett. And in this meeting, the president would get literally a readout of enrollments, right? Mm. And the president was smart. Obviously, he's the smartest person in the room, but he'd dig deeper. He's like, all right, well, but what is the demographic breakdown of those enrollments?
Mm. Right.
And every week he kept hearing old people are signing up. And he's like, well, what are we doing to get young people to sign up for healthcare?
Yeah.
And there was never a good answer, right? Like every single time people would be like, well, you know, we're talking to LeBron. You know, it's like all these like bad like response. You know, it's always like, well, you know, I have a friend who knows some young people, you know, like.
But the fact that he was so down for it.
Yes.
Like
he had the consciousness to dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, but he did it.
He was the one. He was like, what are we doing? And so part of my job at the White House, my portfolio was this community. Like my portfolio was progressives. This is what we used to call leftists back in the day. We called them progressives, mm-hmm. and Hollywood and like, you know, producers and writers and celebrities, et cetera. And so I had a whole plan that I wrote. Here are all the things that President Obama should do. And a lot of them, the president didn't do, but the big one on there, like on the top of my list was Between Two Ferns. And I'd gotten mm-hmm. to know Funny or Die, and I'd gotten to know those guys very well. And they had, the other thing I'll say that people don't realize is they did a bunch of videos for healthcare before Between Two Ferns. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we were able to point to all of these other videos that they had produced without our, you know, we literally just said to Mike Farrow, who's CEO, like, hey man, like we really need your help. Could you make some content? You know, again, it became this like moment where we looked at the data. We're like, every single one of these Between Two Ferns videos gets like upwards of 10 million views, like 10 mm-hmm. to 20 million views. And by the way, y'all, this is before Facebook video.
Yeah.
This is before Twitter video. This is before Instagram.
Yes.
This is like, we're like old people. You know what I mean? Like the video was posted.
Old school YouTube.
The video was on a website.
Right. Exactly. Funny or Die's
website. You had to go to a website to watch this video. Like that's the craziest
thing. Not an app.
Yeah. Not an app. Not anything. It was like, you had to like type it into your web browser, Funny or Die. And you had to go to this thing.
Right.
And it got 40 million views. And people went to the website and it changed literally overnight. The enrollment. It was the craziest thing. So like that day, it had the highest uptick in traffic and the trend line of young people. So it was the highest day of enrollment for young people was the day that Between mm-hmm. Two Ferns dropped. So, you know, like once that happened, Renee, it was like that changed the game for me, because once I was at mm-hmm. the White House, because I'd been doing all of this work, right? Advocacy work. And I've been doing all this stuff internally and like trying to get people to like do stuff. And then once I realized like, oh, wait a second. You know, like the work that you guys do, the work that filmmakers do, the work that writers do, right? Journalists do. There needs to just be better synergy mm-hmm. yeah. between people that actually know how to reach people, like actually know how to make people laugh and make people cry, right. Except for Ray. Ray doesn't cry.
He's not the demographic, whatever. Moving on.
But those are the people that we need to be working with.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Why absolutely. Am I not crying?
Yeah, exactly. We got to get better. We got to get better ad makers to make Ray cry.
I'm curious though, you know, that video Between Two Ferns, with Obama back in 2014. Now it's 2022. I mean, what kind of message do you think Hollywood could be helping to get out in this upcoming midterm election?
It's the right question, right? And my friend went off on the rails the other day because I had like maybe too much to drink and I was like going on and on. He's like, Brad, I think you have to channel this into like, you should like write some stuff maybe. I'm like, no, I'm not going to write it. Who wants to, like, who cares about what I say? But, you know, my thing is, you know, I think that there's like the BTS thing at the White House, right? Perfect example. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how you guys feel about it. I fucking loved it. I fucking loved it more than anything else in the world.
Olivia Rodrigo was there, you exactly. know, talking about, right? Yeah.
By the way, also the two biggest like drop eyes at the White House, Asians. Let's go, right?
Yeah. That caused a stir. Yeah, like every firestorm.
Everywhere. We're crushing it everywhere. At the end of the day, it's to me, it's a ladder of engagement, not to sound like an organizer, right? It's a ladder of engagement. And the way that you pull people up by the ladder is you first have to actually get them to pay attention to what the fuck you're talking about. So use my language. Yep. And like, you know, celebrities, I think that there's been real malpractice with celebrity engagement when it comes to politics, right? And I don't want to put anyone on blast. I don't want to name names or name group names, but like,
I'm curious.
I think that it's less, I'll put it this way. It's less about getting really beautiful celebrities to sing Imagine or really beautiful celebrities to
like, oh my God, please tell
people like who they should vote for. It's like,
not naming names.
It doesn't matter what, I don't care. Like, I don't even care how smart of a celebrity you are. No one wants to hear you tell them who they should vote for. Like that's just not interesting or compelling in my opinion, right? I think that what Hollywood needs to do a better job at is the way that I'll put it is distribution. I think it's trusted voices. I think it's in a world of a bifurcated media environment, right, where like no one watches the news, no one reads the New York Times, no one under the age of like 55, right? Like no, like traditional media. And think about how much attention the White House and politicians pay to those journalists. But no one reads that stuff. Meaning like the sort of people, the 80 million people that don't vote, they're not reading the Washington Post or the New York Times, right? But what they are doing is they are watching every single post from BTS. You know what I mean? And
like, yeah.
And they're listening to your podcast, right? And they're reading Minjin's book, right? And they're, you know,
yeah.
The thing that we need to do a better job at is allowing those people, right? Those people who have a trusted community. Cause at the end of the day, and I probably sound like everyone says this, but there's just no trust at all. Like no one trusts anyone.
There's a level of skepticism.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying that people trust Ariana Grande more than they trust AOC, but at least they're watching Ariana Grande's shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I'll give, speaking of Ari, who I'm a huge fan of, by the way, and my daughter loves,
I love her.
I always have to like bleep her songs because they're like way too much.
What are you talking about?
Ari needs to just do like a Kids Bop version of all of her songs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
she's really leaning into her womanhood.
I also learned the meanings of the songs after and I'm like,
you're like, oh, whoa. Man. I didn't even know that. Side to side, okay, alrighty.
Okay, I know what exactly. Sadie's like,
what you don't want to ride a bicycle. Okay, never mind.
So, but like, here's the thing that Ari did that I love. She partnered with Headcount. She went on tour last cycle. She got like not millions. She got at least tens of thousands of kids registered to vote. Every single one of her concerts, right? Like they had voter registration at every single one of her concerts, right? Like that's dope. That's cool. Something that every musician should do, right?
That's going to where the people are at.
Exactly. And then the other thing too, you know, this is a call to all the filmmakers who are listening to your pod. If you are a filmmaker and you're upset about what's going down, come like DM me, get in my DMs. Like, let's make some cool content. Let's make some shit that people, you know, that will move people, right? Because the sort of talent suck. I mean, the reason why our stuff always looks better, you know, and you know, we produce content for a lot of organizations. We're always looking for more incredible writers and filmmakers, but there's a huge disconnect. I mean, every single one of those TV ads, there's like $1 billion spent on TV ads every cycle. They all suck. No yes. one wants to watch any of those ads.
That's right. Know?
And then when you see a good one, you're like, oh, a good one. You're like, wow, yeah, yeah. where did that come from?
Right, right.
So what I would urge Hollywood to do is, and they're doing it, right? Like, I want to shout out Natalie Tran, who's head of CAA Foundation, Asian American, who's incredible. She gets it. You know, the cool yeah. thing that she did last cycle was, because of COVID, there was a huge shortage of poll workers. So the cool thing that she did was, like, she got all of her talent to just make a bunch of videos just like urging people to volunteer to be poll workers.
Wow.
It's so great. It's like such a smart, that's like such a, like, we need poll workers, right? Because if we don't have poll workers, people are going to be waiting in line for fucking 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do? How can we get more people to sign up? So they got Trevor Noah and they got all these people to, like, make these really smart spots, like, go sign up. And, like, the volunteer signups shot up, right? People were volunteering, young people were volunteering to be poll workers. Like, that's the kind of thing, right? Like, being smart about your voice. And then I think the other thing is, and some people are better at this than others, but, like, of course, be yourself, but don't tell people what to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And don't shame people. And that's the other thing, too. I think that,
yeah, unfortunately,
people will sniff that out real soon,
real quick. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like two sides of the same coin, though, a little bit, because I do think DC people a lot of times will be like, oh, Hollywood, they don't know what the fuck they're doing, right? And vice versa. I think a lot of people in Hollywood are like, oh, these politicians are all corrupt. And I think that we just got to work, you know, we got to work better together, right? And 100%. The cool thing is, I do think that there are a lot of people like me now, right? Like, people who sort of have their foot in, like, both worlds and can be a little bit of, like, a translator, right? Like, you know, translator for both of those worlds. But the big thing, honestly, if anyone's listening who's a filmmaker, I would say, just go do it too. You don't need anyone to give you permission, right? My favorite directors who I work with is this guy, Jonathan Olinger, and he's a beautiful filmmaker. And some of the most iconic spots of the past, like, 8 years is just Jonathan. He just go do it. Like, the iconic Bernie spot, like, some of the iconic Bernie spots were just, he just did them. He didn't ask for permission. You know what I mean? Like, just was like, I'm really inspired by this Bernie Sanders guy. I'm going to go make this video. And yes, we can. The Will I Am piece, my friend Pantera executive produced that. Like, Will didn't ask for permission to go do that, right? And like, looking back at it now, it feels very dated, you know? Like, I just watched it recently. I'm like, oh my God, this is, like, so cute, you know? Like, it's like, it wouldn't play today. Like, you have to do something a little bit different today.
Yeah.
But if you are a creator, you know what I mean? Like, if you're a creator, and maybe this is, like, a great prompt for some of your creatives, like, listening. Andy Kim, we've talked about him, like, 5 times, right?
I know.
My man is the only...
Andy Kim, you got to come onto the pod.
Andy Kim's got to come on. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about Andy. Andy's in a fight for his life right now. Andy's in a Trump district, right? Andy just got redistricted. So he's now in a district that half the district doesn't even know who Andy is, right?
Right.
Andy also is running against, and I kid you not, this sounds like a plot line from, like, a Will Ferrell movie. He's running against a billionaire, the heir to a billionaire cruise line owner. I think it's, like, the Viking cruise
billions
line.
Of dollars.
That's right.
Oh my god.
This guy's self-financing. So this guy's going to pour tens of millions of dollars into his election. And the other thing that this guy has is a mom who gave him a super PAC for his birthday. She was like, on his birthday, I'm announcing that I'm starting a super PAC for my son.
Oh, and my get this, can't get
this.
That.
Here's the greatest thing. This guy, and by the way, this guy's going to hate me, so please don't come after me and at me. But, like, this guy's a yoga instructor, and there's nothing against yoga instructors. I love yoga instructors. But, like, think about that, right? Like, he's a yoga instructor who's a billionaire son, who's running against a Rhodes Scholar who served in Afghanistan, who's, like, a national security expert. And Andy Kim might lose. So a prompt to your creatives out there, like, Andy needs help. People need to know who Andy is. People need to know his story, right?
100%.
And, like, he has very limited resources. He can't go out and hire Paul Thomas Anderson to go, to go make, he can't hire Justin Chan, right? To go make a film. Like, he can't do it.
Yeah. Well, Brad, we are coming up on time. I wish we had more time. I really do appreciate all the wisdom that you've shared with us today. I mean, the conversation has been so fruitful, honestly. talked about a little bit of everything.
We did it.
We gotta have you come back and talk more about movies, though.
Yo, let's do it. You guys pick the movie. I love all the movies you guys have done. They're so good.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Brad. We've taken up a lot of your time. I want to thank you again.
One last thing. What's one thing you want to drop?
Final plug. What's one thing you want to plug?
Oh, man. I don't even know, man. I think that, I'll put it this way. It's not even like a plug for me. I'd say for anyone listening, just like go to the Google machine, right? And like look up in your hometown or like where you live or what you're up to, like people that are running. And I kid you not, like they need your help, you know? And if you want to make it easier, you can come to API Victory Fund and give us some money and we'll figure it out for you. You know, $5 really goes a long way. Or to your point, like going and volunteering and like knocking on doors and meeting people. The other thing I'll say, like if you're a single person, best way to meet a cool person.
You can even phone bank. You know, organized. You can do it from home in your underwear.
All my favorite people. I have so many friends who found their life partner on a table.
AAPIVictoryFund.com. I will drop it in the show notes. Thank you again, Brad.
Ray and Renee. Yo, thank you. I love the pod. Thank you for having me.